gift of grace to someone that will build them up every solitary time. And so you want to talk about fruit. If you just go through your day dispensing grace all day long, guess what? You're going to see all kinds of fruit coming as a result. I remember years ago I was asked to speak at a conference for Billy Graham evangelists. So if you were an evangelist for the Billy Graham organization, they had an annual meeting where they all got together at the Billy Graham Cove out in Asheville, outside of North Carolina. Cliff Barrows was going to do the music for that then, and so the Billy Graham evangelist for Asia, for Africa, for Central America, for Canada, all the regional kind of, for India, like all the evangelists were all gathered, and they asked me to do the Bible teaching each morning for 3 mornings. So pretty awesome group, and it's in this beautiful chapel in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It was awesome. And so I did that for 3 days. The last day, I finished my talk. I'm getting ready to go to the airport, fly home, and this guy comes up to me, and he says, "I've got to tell you a story about your dad." And I've had people tell me that a lot, and I'll tell you what a heritage. Where everywhere you go, someone wants to tell you a story about how your dad blessed their life. So it's like, oh, okay, what's your story? He said, well, he was a director of evangelism for a state convention. And he loved evangelism. He'd been a pastor. He loved ministry, loved evangelism. And then one day he discovered that his wife was committing adultery with his best friend. And he said, in that one horrific day, I lost my wife, I lost my best friend, and I lost my job. Now, he was not committing sin, but in that day, about 25 or so years ago, you couldn't hold your job and be divorced. And so even though he's not committed adultery, he's not committed sin, the fact that his wife had divorced him meant he couldn't hold his job anymore. Now, things have kind of changed since then, but that's how it was then. So he realized that because his wife has sinned, he's got to look for another line of work. The one thing he's enjoyed doing, can't do anymore. And he said, it was just like my whole world just went black. One day I think I've got the greatest life in all the world. The next day, there's no future. There's no hope. There's nothing. But the last thing this guy had to do, he said, was go to a conference in New Mexico. And my dad was actually speaking at that conference. And so this guy goes, but he's like a zombie. He's just going through the motions. He knows when I get home from this job, I'm unemployed. I've got nothing, nothing. No job, no income, no hope, nothing. So he's just kind of stumbling through the day. And he said, he was walking through the lobby after someone had preached. And he said, all of a sudden someone punched me in the arm. And he said, I didn't think things could get any worse. Like, I've already, my entire life is in the dumpster, and now someone's hitting me. And he turned around, it's my dad. Now, my dad's a Canadian. Canadians don't typically go around hitting strangers. But what happened was, my dad was book solid. Like, they were just taking my dad meeting to meeting to meeting all day long. And his handler, who was getting him from place to place, saw this other man walk by. And the man knew the guy's story. And he turned to my dad and he said, Henry, I know we've got your book solid, but he said, if you have any moment to be that guy right over there, you see that guy going by? He said, that's probably the most hurting man on the whole property right now. And he said, I don't know if you'd have a moment, but if you ever get next to that guy, he could use some encouragement. Well, I'll tell you what, you know what my dad always did when someone told him stuff like that? He made a beeline. And in fact, have you ever had people share with you something, a burden, and then you said, oh, I'll have to pray for you? What's a better thing to say than I'll have to pray for you? Put your arm around him and pray right then. Yeah, my dad taught me that. Don't say you'll pray later. It might be a 30-second prayer, but pray right now. God just showed you a need. So get in there right now. So my dad couldn't really spend much time with him because he was speaking somewhere, but he ran over, punched the guy in the arm. The guy turns around, says, hey, I'm sorry, I'm Henry Blackaby. I want to spend time with you before this day is done. And he said, I'm not free till 10 o'clock tonight. Could you meet me in the prayer garden? Now, I've spoken in a lot of meetings, and I can tell you, if I'm not free until 10 at night, I'm not looking for another meeting. I'm looking for my hotel room at that point. But my dad added this guy on at 10 o'clock. The guy was telling me this story. Now, he's thinking back 20 years ago. He's telling me this story. And he said, So he said, I'm at the prayer garden, but I'm not really expecting to see your dad. I mean, that was in the morning, that morning, and your dad's been busy all day. Like, I'm not really expecting anything. But he said, shortly after 10, I hear footsteps coming up the steps. Sure enough, there's your dad. And your dad comes in, he looks me in the eye, and he gets close. He just says, tell me what's going on. And he said, I kind of just gave him in 2 minutes. I just kind of gave him the gist of what was going on. Your dad stopped me. He didn't want to hear any more of that. He got the idea. And he said, then your dad just looked me at me like no one had looked at me for a long time. And he said, I'm going to tell you. He quoted him a scripture. And the scripture basically said, your best days lie ahead of you, not behind you. This guy thought his best days were gone. But he said, oh no, the best days are still coming. And then he said, your dad just prayed for me. But he said, lots of people had said prayers for me before. He said, but your dad was the first person to cry out to God for me. And he said, I learned there's a huge difference between saying a prayer and crying out to God. And he said, as your dad was praying, he said, for the first time, as I listened to your dad pleading with God for me, he said, for the first time I thought to myself, God's got to hear that prayer. Anyone who prays like that, with that faith and passion, God's going to hear him. And he said, I had hope for the first time. He said, I left that my job. He left the state he was in, moved to a new state. He said, and eventually the Billy Graham organization got a hold of me, and they hired me. And he said, you know, if you ever watch those crusades, where a Billy Graham revival crusade was happening anywhere in Asia, and he said, when you saw the hundreds of people coming forward to pray to receive Christ, he said, I trained every counselor who led those people to Christ. For 25 years, he said, and he was still in the job when he was telling me this. He said, I don't know how many thousands of people have been led to Christ by someone I trained. And he said, people come and ask me, and they say, how have you had such a rich, fruitful, blessed ministry? And he met a godly woman that married him and had been by his side ever since. He said, when people ask, how have you had such a blessed ministry? He said, I always tell people, it began with a 10-minute conversation with Henry Blackaby. 10 minutes is what all that took. How much can God do in 10 minutes? When you're walking in the Spirit and you're speaking words of grace. You're not talking about yourself. You're not bragging about your accomplishments. You're not talking about the weather. God has suddenly put you next to somebody, and for 10 minutes, Spirit-led, speaking words of grace, what difference could... I don't know how much... And so I'm trying to think. All those people that found Christ, how much fruit came out of that 10-minute conversation? Only heaven could tell you how much fruit resulted because of my dad's 10-minute conversation. I could not tell you how many times someone has told me that 10 minutes with my dad changed their life. And he wasn't just a brilliant person. He was just a person that was looking for fruit. Where's the fruit to be had? And he kept looking for it. He kept finding it. And he wouldn't even know. He wouldn't remember just how much God had done. Well, just one or two other things to say. That's dad. And then through my work, wherever you go to work, you spend a lot of time there. And if you're going to spend a lot of time there, there needs to be fruit, should there not? And fruit, of course, looks a lot of ways. Fruit is salvation, but fruit is also just building up. Fruit is blessing. Fruit is giving hope. Fruit can be a lot of things, right? But it's stuff that God does. Fruit is anything God does through your life, and produces stuff. And, you know, some of us work, or some of you work in places that aren't all that godly. You know, you're not all pastors, and you work in some pretty difficult places. I remember when I was in seminary, I was working on a PhD, and so I was trying to find we had two little preschool boys at that point. So she wanted to stay home and raise them. But I'm a full-time doctoral student, so I got to figure out how to work full-time and be a full-time student at the same time. And so the only way I could do that was to work the graveyard shift. And so I tried to get a job as a pastor. I couldn't find a church that wanted me. And so I found a job at a psychiatric hospital. And I remember at the time thinking, God, I'm going to be a pastor one day. How is working at a psych hospital going to prepare me to work in the church? And I discovered it was great training for what was coming. But so I'm working in a psych hospital, the night shift, and I would work all night long, get off at 7:30 in the morning. I'd work from 11 at night till 7:30 in the morning. It took about 10 minutes to get home. And I, twice a week, I had an 8 o'clock in the morning seminar. So I would get home, have to get changed, and then race across the street, get over to the school, get up to the classroom on the second floor. I could never quite get there on time. They were always in the opening prayer when I would slink in. And so I'm just under a huge, now you got a 3-hour PhD seminar after working all night. So I'm thinking, Lord, this is tough slugging, just trying to get this education done and be faithful. And so then when I think it can't, have you ever thought like, well, things can't get any worse? And then you discover that's not true. They can get worse. And so one day I'm walking in at 11 o'clock, just before 11, ready to check in for my shift. And all the evening crew is out in the hallway waiting for us to get there. And when I arrive, they start saying, oh, Richard, I feel so sorry for you. It's like, what do you mean? What's going on? They said, haven't you heard? No, I haven't heard anything. What's going on? They said, well, you've got a new charge nurse, the new nurse in charge of my boss, my immediate supervisor. Brand new. Do you know who it is? No, I have no idea. Who's my boss? They said, well, this woman had been a nurse on the day shift, but she was the most dysfunctional, socially awkward person that I'd ever met. And this woman had been divorced 5 times. She did not like men. She had been cheated, betrayed, lied to, forsaken so many times. And that she just looked at her. She had these beady eyes and she would just stare at you. Just knowing that you're going to stab her in the back. She knows it. So she's just going to let you know, I know what you're up to, and you're not going to, no one's going to get me again. And so she treated all of her staff that way, and the staff had all hated her. And so the staff would go up over her head and go to the supervisors and complain about everything that she did. And so finally, administration stepped in. I mean, there's about to be a riot there among all the orderlies like me on the day shift. So they told this woman, you've got two choices. Either we fire you right now, or we exile you to the night shift where there's not as many staff people for you to torment, and you've got to go to a psychiatrist every week, and in 3 months, and you're on probation, and in 3 months we'll decide whether to fire you then or not. What do you want? So she took exile to my shift. And so when I walk in, she sees the people just like me betrayed her on the day shift. Now she's seeing who the betrayers are, the Judases are in the night shift. And so she just stares me down. I say, hey, I'm Richard. I'll be working with you. And she just stares me down. Like, just defies me to try to get the best of her. And I'll tell you what, she was an awkward person. And she would just say stuff that was so rude. One day she said something to me and I just burst out laughing, and she thought I was mocking her. She's like ready to go, toe to toe. I said, no, I'm not arguing with you. I've just never had anyone tell me that before. I said, but that's what you want. I'll see if I can do that for you. But, it's like, but I just made a commitment. It's funny because I'm at seminary preparing to be a pastor. I'm doing doctoral level theology studies to be a pastor. And God said, you want doctoral training? I'll give you doctoral training. And it won't be reading books in a library. I'm going to give you the most difficult human being you have ever had to deal with. Let's see how you do with that. And so I just said, God, I don't care how bad it gets. Don't ever let me lose my Christian composure. Don't ever let me say an unkind word out of my mouth, no matter what she says to me. It was sort of like an experiment with me. Can I be godly with the most ungodly, unkind person I've ever met in my life? And she would say stuff, and there'd be nice, I would always have someone else assigned to work with me that didn't necessarily know this woman. And so I knew, I could take it to the bank. Every time it was someone else's first time with this woman, we weren't even be 30 minutes into the shift, and they'd pull me aside and say, Richard, tell me about the nurse. I think she really hates me. And I would say, oh no, that's how she talks to everybody. It's fine. And so I just decided no matter what she does, I'm going to love this woman. Because I don't think she's ever been loved by anybody. She didn't even know what it feels like to be genuinely cared about. I'm going to be the first person. And so I just kept doing that. And so every 30 minutes, either I or my partner would have to walk down. We had to go into every room and visibly see the patients, make sure they were in their beds, not someone else's bed, and check on them. And so one night it's my turn. It's about time for me to go make my next checks. She walks out and says, "Hey, I'll do the checks for you." Because I would do homework during the night. Once everybody was in bed, I would do homework. That's how I managed to work full time and go to school. And so she sees me with my books, and she said, "You keep reading. I'll do that." I'm in shock. I think she was just nice to me. I've never seen that before. Never heard of that. About a week later, she says, "Hey, Richard, I'm thinking about ordering in some Chinese food. I'm starving. You want me to get enough for you? Do you like that?" Like I'm thinking, is she going to put poison in my food? Like what? Like, and I just watched her soften by the grace of God. And no matter how rude she was, I just smiled and said, "All right, you got it." And she got to the point, she started asking, saying, "What night are you off?" I'd be off one. I had to work every other weekend, so it meant during the week I'd have one night off somewhere Monday to Friday. She'd start asking me, "What night are you off?" I said, "Why do you want to know?" She said, I don't feel safe here when you're not here." And so 3 months later, I just go to work one night, and the boss, the big boss, shows up. And she's on the day shift, but she shows up at 11 o'clock, pulls me into a side room and says, "Richard, your boss's probation ends tonight. All I need to know is it's just not going to work, and she's done. Just tell me the truth. What's it like?" And she said, "Now, she'll never know. You tell me you want a different boss, I'll walk her out the door, and she'll never enter this building again. You're fine. She'll never know it was you. But you're the senior guy. I need to hear it from you." But, you know, if you've had 3 months to just purposefully love someone every day, you start loving them. And, I mean, roughest individual I think I'd ever saw, but you know what? Even really people rough on the edges, if you get to see their heart, you realize this is someone God loves too. And so I just said, I wouldn't fire her. I'd keep her. And so this boss said, "Listen, if we keep her, you will be assigned to her. That means you get her. You can't pawn her off on anyone else. You're the only one that wants her. Everyone else says to fire her. You will have to work with her every day if you give me the thumbs up." I said, "That's fine. I want to work with her every night. I think she's actually a good nurse. Just she's really rude and offensive and says really awkward things. But as far as, you know, medicating people and doing a good job, I think she does that fine." And so for the rest of my time there, I worked with her. And I remember finally I graduated. I was leaving the country and going to Canada to be a pastor. I remember the day I had to come and tell her I was leaving. And I don't know what she took, but she came out a minute or two later with a bottle of some kind of medication and was literally, her hands were shaking. She poured some medication and popped some pills in her mouth and said, "You're doing this to me." She said, "I don't know if I can face being here without you here." And I kept up with her for a while. She knew I was a Christian. I prayed for her, but I thought to myself, it would have been so easy to say there's no fruit to be had here. God doesn't even know this woman's address. But the fact was, God wanted her to know too, that he loved her too. And I told her, she arranged a farewell party for me off-site and had all the staff come. And I just thought to myself, God, you're amazing. You can find fruit in some of the most unlikely places if you just keep your eyes open. Some of you have been working in the same place or living in the same neighborhood for 10, 20 years. Should there be some fruit after 10 years working in the same place? How much fruit should there be? I've had to say, God, there ought to be a little more fruit after all this time. One last just real practical example, just kind of a fun thing that happened recently. Last Christmas, my wife, she, we, our whole church went through experiencing God, And I'm a Sunday school teacher at my church, so on Sundays when I'm in town, I teach this class. So we're teaching it, and my wife would never in a million years stand behind a podium and speak to anybody. She would not write a book. She would not speak in public. And she's married into this family where all the rest of us are all speakers and writers, and she's never going to do that. So one day she prayed, said, God, I'm not going to go speak. I'm not going to write. But do you have something for me? Is there something you want me to do? And God just really clearly said, I want you to bless your neighborhood. And we've lived in that neighborhood about 10 years. And, you know, it's a fine neighborhood, but I mean, you know, it's a typical suburban neighborhood. Everyone's busy and comes in home from work late, and you sometimes wave as they're driving by, but you don't really know them. And so, my wife says, what am I going to do? I mean, I'm not going to hold like a tent revival meeting in my neighborhood. Like, what do I do? God just said, well, I'll show you. So a week or two later, my wife likes to run, and she'll run about 5K around the neighborhood. And so she goes out to run. Well, she wants to run on Monday, but then stuff happens and a grandkid's coming early to be watched and my wife can't get away. So she thinks she'll run Tuesday. Stuff comes up, can't get away Tuesday. So it's Wednesday. Stuff comes up again, and she thinks to herself, I gotta get out there and run. But now it's in hot Atlanta, and so if you don't run by like 6 in the morning, it's hot and muggy, and it's miserable to run. And so she's thinking, it's gonna be miserable. I don't want to run in that. But if I don't run today, like half the week's gone. So she decides she's just run as much as she can. So she goes out running. It's later than she normally does. It's not on a day she normally would. But she's running, and right as you come around to our street, up just right before our house, there's a pretty steep incline. The hill kind of gets a little steep. And so we always walk that. I'll do a 5K run there too, but you don't run up that hill. You get to that hill and then you walk. And so she's just getting to that hill, ready to walk, and she sees this Polish couple, a couple that immigrated from Poland. They live about 2 houses down from us. Sweet couple, don't really know them very well. We know that they're from Poland and so on, but they're already making their way up the hill. And so my wife's first thought was, okay, I asked God to make me a blessing in my neighborhood. I guess I should try to talk to someone in the neighborhood. But I mean, this couple's out for a walk. I don't want to disturb. You ever said to yourself, well, I don't want to disturb them, you know? They seem like they're having a nice time on their own. And so she's kind of running through all the excuses. And so finally, she thinks, well, I prayed and said, God, make me a blessing. There's the only two neighbors that are anywhere physically where I could actually talk to. So she just kind of lopes on up and catches up to them, says hi. And they're very pleasant. They're walking together, talking about flowers they see and the day and the weather. And all of a sudden this woman, stops, says, oh, excuse me, I just got to stop for a second, just about halfway up the hill. And so my wife just says, are you sick? Is there something wrong? You know, is there a reason you're struggling today to walk up this hill? And this woman just stares at my wife, doesn't answer her, just stares at her, looks at her husband, looks back at my wife. And then finally she just says, I have breast cancer and I haven't told anybody but my husband. But she said, I just feel like I can trust you to tell you that. And my wife discovers she is scared to death. And she's carrying this burden and this fear alone. And my wife says, well, listen, I don't mean to pry, but do you mind telling me what kind it is? And she tells my wife says, my sister had that exact cancer just a year. I've just walked with my sister through that identical cancer. And I mean, day by day, we got updates and reports, and we were told about the medical background of this and the treatments, and how are they treating you? Well, that's exactly the way they treated my sister. Everything sounds exactly the same. And then this woman, she just gets all, you can tell she's just trembling. She just can't get these words out. And finally she says, is your sister still alive? Did she make it? And my wife's like, yes, she made it. She's healthy as a horse. She's doing fine. She's out walking and doing great. That's very treatable. And they're treating you the same way. And you look very healthy. It's going to be fine. And this almost complete stranger is hugging my wife in the middle of the street saying, I'm so glad that I talked to you today. I've been so scared. I've been so worried. My wife goes home and she's watching one of our granddaughters that day. She gets our granddaughter to make a casserole, makes a pie. I've told my wife, I'm happy if you want to give away some of our tuna casseroles, but like when I need to vote on the pies being given away, because those, I'm a little partial to those. But she brings a pie and a casserole and a devotional book and just brings it by. She's from Poland. She's Catholic. And brings it by and just says, it's going to be fine. You're going to be okay. And anything I can do to help you, just let me know. Well, that woman comes by about a month later, says, the doctor said I'm doing great. It looks like it's going to be okay. She brings us these beautiful gifts at Christmas time and just says, I just have the best neighbors in all the world. Well, we already knew that before that. Now she stops by and she's got a son that's going through a divorce. His wife has left him and she's heartbroken. And she'll come in and she'll be just sharing the burden of that. And we'll pray for her and we'll encourage her. And I'm thinking to myself, my wife just simply said, is there fruit to be, we've lived in this neighborhood for 10 years. Is there fruit that I've been missing all this time? She lived two doors down from us. And all of a sudden, she's like our best friend. When you're walking in the Spirit, you'll be blown away by the fruit that could be had. What Jesus said, this is how you glorify God the Father. You produce much fruit. My question is, especially as I enter a new year, I'm always asking myself, God, where is the fruit I haven't noticed yet? I haven't seen any fruit at work yet. I haven't seen any fruit in my neighborhood yet. I haven't seen any fruit here, but God, I'm sure there is fruit there. Just help me to find it. Whether it's just a 10-minute conversation, whether it's just stopping to ask how your neighbor's doing, there's fruit to be had. I pray that in the days to come, you'll have an abundant harvest of spiritual fruit coming out of your life to the glory of God. Well, let me pray for you. Lord, thank you for these men and just their desire to glorify you, their desire to put a smile on your face when they watch the way that you're living your life for them. And I just pray, Lord, that the days just ahead of us would be the most fruitful days we've ever had. God, may we not squander conversations with people that could be used to build them up and extend them grace. And God, whether it's at work, whether it's walking into our church building, Lord, may we not be self-centered people, always looking for how we could be blessed. But God, may we not want to come to the end of our day without having been used by you some way with some person to be a blessing to someone else. And so God, may these be the most blessed, fruitful days we've ever had in our life. May our best days of service lie just ahead of us and not behind us. And I'd pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.